the traditional paradigm has been, let's share all our benefits with people and talk about how great they are. But the problem is that it can be overwhelming. That in of itself is stressful. If you're a large company and you have, you know, dozens of benefits and they're, you know, you're sharing all this technical information. It's like, okay, where do I start? How does this relate to me? What financial wellness does is provides a multi-channel platform as an employee benefit where essentially employees get unlimited financial coaching.
This is the Rebel HR Podcast. If you're a professional looking for innovative, thought-provoking information in the world of human resources, this is the right podcast for you. Rebel on, HR Rebels. All right, Rebel HR listeners, thank you so much for joining us. I'm excited about our conversation today with Liz Davidson. Liz is CEO and founder of Financial Finesse. What a great name. A Los Angeles-based firm providing millions of Americans with access to unbiased financial guidance through workplace financial wellness solutions. Welcome to the show, Liz.
Thank you for having me.
Well, I'm really excited to dive into this topic of financial wellness as an employee benefit. And it's an area, admittedly, I don't know a whole lot about. So I'm curious to just learn a little bit more about financial wellness and how did you get into the financial wellness benefit game?
Got it. Well, it's funny because, you know, financial wellness now you're kind of hearing everywhere. It's very pervasive, even, you know, on commercials, large financial institutions, everyone's in the financial wellness business. And, you know, it's, you know, I want to make a really important distinction here. Done right, when we look at financial wellness, we're looking at it from the impact on the participant, from being able to provide completely unconflicted, personalized guidance that's in the best interest of an employee to get them to a place where they are financially stable. So, you know, their debt is under control. They have insurance in place where needed. They have an emergency fund. So, you know, they're resilient. They can weather a shock. They have their goals mapped out. A lot of people don't, you know, they have goals in a loose way, but they know I want to buy a home. At this time period, I want to send my children to college. I want to retire at this time period. And they are on track based on what they're looking at in terms of time frame. They're on track to reach those goals. And then, you know, their wealth is protected to the extent they have accrued wealth. It does not mean you're financially secure, but it means you are in a position where the things you are doing day in and day out are contributing to your financial security. And it's the only sustainable way, because think of lottery winners, for example, it's the only sustainable path to financial security. Because once you're financially secure, you have to maintain that security, right? And not make decisions that jeopardize it. So companies are increasingly recognizing that employees are so, you know, very financially stressed, both, you know, market volatility, which we saw at the beginning of COVID, just the uncertainty of life, the fact that benefits, now you have more funding that you have to do as an employee, more decisions to make. And the traditional paradigm has been, let's share all our benefits with people and talk about how great they are. But the problem is that it can be overwhelming. That in of itself is stressful. If you're a large company and you have, you know, dozens of benefits and they're, you know, you're sharing all this technical information. It's like, okay, where do I start? How does this relate to me? What financial wellness does is provides a multi-channel platform as an employee benefit where essentially employees get unlimited financial coaching through all, you know, mediums, digital, phone-based, app-based, through webcasts. They get unlimited personal financial coaching to make the best possible decisions around how to maximize their comp and their benefits. So all of a sudden, the benefits are really truly benefits because they're fueling my family's financial future or my financial future, as opposed to an SPD that, you know, I'm trying to navigate. Like, what exactly does this mean? How much can I take out as a loan? How, you know, all of that. So
Yeah. Yeah. Every time somebody asks me for a summary plan description and I'm like, you sure you want the 98 page summary plan description document? Well, yeah, I just want to see. Okay. Here you go. Have at it. That's good luck with that.
Cure for insomnia.
Yeah. And then there's so much, I mean, there's so, and this is, you know, coming from an HR standpoint, like there's so much legalese that you have to put in all that stuff. It's like, you have to have a Juris Doctorate just to even understand what does this sentence say and what does it actually mean? And then trying to work through, you know, a scenario where an employee has a question as an HR professional, you're like, I don't know.
Yes. And as an HR professional, you have to be very careful, right, about not crossing that line into giving advice, you know, especially around the retirement plan and things like that.
Sure.
So it's, you know, some of this is really a tool to the HR professionals can leverage to the extent they have employees that are confused about benefits, complaining about benefits, asking for their advice. What do you, you know, asking, what do you do in your 401k plan, you know, so that they can do the same thing, but they may be in a different situation. So, you know, it's also a, you know, a good resource from that standpoint, both to legally protect HR, but also to just, you know, be able to refer to a resource that's trusted, that they've implemented as an employee benefit, and tell the story of, look how committed we are to your financial success. We've actually contracted with a firm that this is all they do to help employees become, you know, more financially well and financially secure. And so it's we hear all the time, it's one of the few things they get thank yous for. And I don't, you know, I don't know if that's something you find, but often in HR, especially in retirement, there's a lot of, oh, this is wrong, or I don't understand this, or why aren't we doing this?
Yeah.
So, you know.
Yeah, we don't get a lot of thank yous on in the context of our benefits package, even if we feel like we've done a good thing. relatively thankless. That's fair. But I do think, you know, such an important topic, and, you know, the events of 2020 and the market crash and subsequent like crazy rebound and the volatility, you know, we certainly got a lot of questions related to the 401k plan. You know, I had people who the minute the market crashed were, you know, saying, hey, I want to get all my money out. Well, you know, okay, that may not be the recommended path forward here, you know, and, and then we had, you know, people who wanted to put a bunch of money in when it crashed and, you know, those kinds of things. And, but then the other thing that I've seen throughout my career, so, you know, little context in my career. So, you know, I graduated college in the early 2000s. And when I came out, one of the first big events was the Great Recession.
Yeah.
And I ran across people who were planning to retire within a year or two, and they couldn't.
Yeah.
And then now, just over the last year, I had employees who, when the crash happened, they were planning to retire and they also didn't. And, you know, it's just to think that, you know, your life plan could be completely disrupted by market volatility is kind of scary and shocking. And, you know, I mean, I think it should be a call to action. If you're so worried about the market going down 40% and you're 2 years from retirement, maybe you need to reevaluate.
You know, you make a really good point, which is, you know, uncertainty, I think, is only going to increase, both in terms of the market, but just even life, right? I mean, you know, how many times have we heard, you know, in the last 10 years, kind of this, you know, once in a lifetime weather conditions, but yet it happens every year. It's not necessarily once in a lifetime anymore. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And you mean like snow during spring break?
So I think with the uncertainty and the pace of change accelerating and everything else, it becomes more important to focus on the things you personally can control and to be resilient, because that's how you protect yourself, is making sure that you have, you know, liquid assets, that you know the risks you are taking and you are comfortable with them, and you're just dialed in and buttoned down, so to speak. So if, you know, if there's a decline, yeah, it might impact your balance on paper, but it's not going to change your life. And it can even be, for those that are well ahead of the curve, it can even be an opportunity to invest more. Again, that gets, you know, dicey if you're very close to retirement, but you have more flexibility, the more resilience you have. Understanding that is obviously considerably more difficult at lower income levels than higher ones and so forth. So everyone's situation is different, and it's something similar to working out. You know, you might start with where you're at, but you can always improve. And, you know, the more you improve, you start developing really a different lifestyle and mentality and fitness level.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So you'll use that term a couple times. So financial fitness, do you consider this something where somebody goes and gets, you know, gets a physical trainer, so to speak, or I don't know if you want to call it an investment trainer or something like that. They get a trainer and they educate them, and then they kind of let them go off and do their own plan? Or how does that work with the benefit?
You know, you said it. It's so the benefit has multiple components. There's a financial wellness assessment, which we look at as kind of a scale. So think of it as stepping on the scale and kind of, you know, I know that feeling can be anxiety producing, but seeing where you're at from a financial wellness perspective. This is different than financial planning. This is really understanding your habits and behaviors based on your situation and your goals. The things you're doing going to impact you in the future, and kind of giving you a score based on that. Then from there, you get very, tangible, personalized next steps based on your situation. That's where the coaching comes into play, is, you know, similar to a personal trainer, right? You step on the scale and, you know, with them, you probably do measurements and body fat a little more than maybe with us, but then they have a starting point, right? And then they talk to you about, okay, so what do you want to do here? Like, you know, is this a CrossFit situation financially? or is it a situation where I just want to be healthier? I want to be under less stress. I want to feel like I'm progressing, but I don't want to do extreme things that, you know, are going to deprive my current lifestyle. So it's just figuring out where are people and what do they want? And then how do you work with them on an ongoing basis? And I think the best physical trainers, you know, very similarly, really tailor it to their client. You know, if someone is, you know, really passionate about certain types of exercise and they're more likely to stick to those, okay, let's make sure, you know, we're integrating that so that you know, this is fun for you and you're making progress and feeling good, as opposed to, oh, I have that appointment again. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm going to come up with any reason that, you know, I'm going to have to cancel, you know? So it's really the same kind of model of, you know, what has really worked well in the physical wellness movement. And, you know, the trainer, in this case, our financial coaches, it's accountability, right? It's an accountability partner that you respect, that's on your side, but is going to really help you stay honest with yourself and, you know, make sure you are progressing. Because it's easy to go to a workshop or a webcast, get all these ideas. Maybe the next couple of days you might get started, and then life.
Been there.
I think we all have.
Yeah. I'm going to do that tomorrow. I got that. I'm going to write that down. And then that sticky note gets stuck on the, you know, whatever, stuck in your pocket. And then you wash your jeans, and then you lose the sticky note.
Exactly. I used to have New Year's resolutions. This is when I was much younger, where, you know, I'm a crazy disorganized entrepreneur with a lot, you know, physical organization. And I was like, okay, I'm going to be clean and neat and organized all year. Well,
day three,
the first week of January, that would kind of wear off. And so that's another, you know, small point to make, which is a lot of this is about really being real with yourself and setting goals and establishing habits that that you can stick to and you enjoy and you can build upon, rather than saying, you know, if I am someone that really loves life experiences and that gives me a lot of joy, I'm going to completely deprive myself in the interest of being more financially well. Well, then you'll crash and burn and do something very expensive just to get your fix, right? So it's, you know, there's also that balance there that I think is critically important. And it's what we're learning about behavioral change in all aspects of people's lives. You know, you don't want to punish yourself or completely change who you are. You want to find a lifestyle that works for you.
Right. Right. Yeah. And I think so much of it, it's not even about money. For me, it's about freedom. It's about having the ability to do what you want to do on your timetable. Whether that means you want to retire at 55, which that's probably not in the cards for many of us, or you want to continue to just work comfortably at a job that you enjoy, that, you know, for a long period of time and just be comfortable in retirement. You know, but for me, it's that wellness is about freedom. It's not about being, you know, wealthy. It's about what does wealth or freedom look like for you?
You know what? I'm with you. That's so well said, Anna. That's something that the industry seems to be rapidly shifting. And we've always been very focused on it's not that ending account balance. It's when are you at a place of financial security where you can do what you want with your life, right?
Right.
And, you know, that may be for a lot of people. I mean, we work with a lot of technology and consulting firms where people love their work. Law firms, you know, like, they love their work. They do not want to retire until they have to. But just the freedom of saying, you know, I potentially could kind of take a step back or maybe change my role within the organization to something that's more fulfilling. Or God forbid something medically or, you know, something happened in my life where I need to retire in part or full. I'm able to because I'm financially able to. And so, you know, I think we got to change our thinking about retirement. You know, I think it has meant for so long the absence of work as opposed to the presence of a really meaningful life where all the work you've done in life leads to this place where you have the flexibility and the resources to do what matters most to you and what fulfills you the most.
Right. Absolutely. So I want to explore a little bit more about your vision for your organization. And the word that stuck out to me as I was reading through your bio and preparing was, you wanted 100% unbiased financial coaching. So walk me through what your focus was as it relates to bias.
Yeah, so I started this business in 1999, dating myself here a bit, but I was in the investment industry, and I was CEO of my own hedge fund, and, you know, I was the one responsible for selling and marketing the fund. And you know, so I was on the other side and I was selling people, and I was, you know, this was during the dot-com era, and we were a value, you know, kind of Warren Buffett, Benjamin Graham investing fund that was very focused on long-term stable blue chip companies. And, you know, this is pets.com era, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, just really recognized that people, There were at that point, and you know, it's probably more now, but hundreds of thousands of financial people calling themselves financial advisors, you know, tens of thousands of, you know, stocks, bonds, mutual funds, you know, even more, you know, products and services. Everything was oriented towards selling something to someone, and all the accompanying guidance, you know, was attached to that. So, you know, you go to, you know, a life insurance broker, and it's gotten a lot better, but you know, no matter what your issue, life insurance is the solution.
yeah. We got whole life. Yeah. We got variable life. We got term life.
Yeah.
Whatever you
know, you're
want.
Just graduating college with a lot of student loan debt, no dependents, you know, and this is what you need to be focused on. Right. So, so I saw this going on, and I even felt like I was part of the problem because I had something to sell, right? So I got to a point where I was like, I want to be on this other side of having no conflict of interest and just focus on helping people. And how can we do that? And it became obvious that the best way to do that was for the companies to pay us as an employee benefit. So we get paid from the company, but we do not sell any financial products, services, investments. We're not affiliated with any firms that do. Hmm. It's completely financial coaching, delivered in an unbiased way. And all of our coaches are certified financial planners that have really made a lifestyle and career change. They've given up their licenses to sell securities. They've maintained all their credentials and designations and increased those. And then now we're on the other side where their entire livelihood, in addition to their base salary, their bonus, which is significant if they, you know, perform well, which obviously all of them do or they wouldn't be here, is based on the behavioral change they're able to impact or support from employees. So instead of being based on commissions, how many policies do you sell, it's what percentage of employees are taking next steps, short, medium, and long term. Like, what is the impact you're having on these people's lives, knowing obviously the employee does the heavy lifting here. But as a coach, you should be judged by the results, you know, the people you're coaching are getting, as opposed to anything else, in my mind. So it's fun.
Wow. I'm just, my brain's going so many different directions. I'm hearing what you're saying. And full disclosure, I actually, one of my internships in college was selling insurance.
Okay.
And under the guise of financial coaching. I mean, but it was exactly what you just described. It was, you know, I came in there my first day, I'm bright-eyed, bushy-tailed. And I said, okay, when are we, you know, where are we going to start to learn about financial wellness? And they're like, no, give me a list of people to call. And that was it, right? Your first task was give me 100 names. And then it was cold calling people and selling them insurance. That was the whole internship. It was awful. And I was like, I thought we were going to help people. It was a vehicle for sales. It wasn't necessarily, the intent wasn't to help. The intent was to sell. And if we help people, that was great. it was like an unintended consequence, but oh, okay, cool. You know? And I'm like, I don't think this is for me. So I like to say HR found me, but you know, I like to think that, you know, those products are there for a really important reason. And if you have dependents and you need life insurance, uh-huh. you need life insurance. Like you,
Absolutely.
Somebody needs to sell that to you. That's critical. But knowing when you need it and what product is actually helpful versus, you know, eroding your wealth slowly, is critical. So I love that context. And we could go really deep on this, but like I have a, the approach on mutual funds and the fact that, you know, really the fund manager's selling the fund, not necessarily trying to get the best investment. It's just trying to get the right investment mix to sell it.
Yeah.
There's so much there.
There's so much there. And really quickly, you make a really good point. So I think there's a distinction between being sold and buying. So what we're trying to do is get employees where it is appropriate for them to buy life insurance or whatever it may be, disability insurance, for them to hire a financial advisor to manage their assets. They're buying because they know this is what's needed. This is what's in their best interest. They know they're a smart, informed consumer.
Right.
And that makes a huge difference because right. Although, I will say most financial advisors, especially those that are certified financial planners, are absolutely above board and additive. You know, you have those Bernie Madoffs of the world, right? Mm-hmm. Where if you make the wrong decision in some of these areas, you can really, really hurt yourself. So having a, you know, a financial wellness benefit where you can you can have kind of an advocate that works with you on sorting through all of this and is helping you buy as opposed to being sold, you know, is a big benefit.
Yeah, absolutely. And you're touching on something that, you know, every HR professional loves slash hates to talk about, and that's incentivizing behavior, right? You know, yeah. So it's the question is what behaviors incentivize? So I'm curious, maybe just the HR nerd in me wants to know, how do you measure a financial advisor on how good of an advisor they actually are? Do you have like a KPI that tracks like the improvement on that, the score of somebody's financial health? How do you do that?
So are you talking about internally for our coaches?
Yeah.
So distinction, we call them coaches as opposed to advisors because we're not giving advice and not selling anything. So our financial coaches, yeah, it's a bunch of KPIs. We have 30 days. We have a behavioral change study that goes or survey that goes out to everyone that meets with a coach. What have you done since? So there's that. And then we look over 1, 3, 5 years, the same users. We have our, you know, remember that scale I talked about, our financial wellness assessment. So similar to trainer, where maybe you start, the only difference is we want to go up in the scale. And typically with a trainer, a personal trainer, people want to go down. So keeping that in mind, you know, where are you starting and where do you finish with your overall score, but also with key aspects. I mean, the assessment is dynamic and very personalized. So, you know, were you prepared for retirement prior? And then are you prepared for retirement now when you, you know, you run a projection based on your deferral rate and your, you know, overall different accounts and situation? Like that's, you know, just getting to see not only your overall improvement and wellness, but what are the areas where you've made improvements? And so all of this we're tracking, and all of this really informs us as to which coaches, you know, should get the highest bonuses and end up, you know, how do we leverage these talents where we see patterns? You know, certain coaches are really strong, similar to certain trainers in certain areas. Okay, so let's leverage them more in this area versus others in this area, and, you know, just make sure we're kind of the highest and best use of our talented team.
That's great. And, you know, I'm just thinking, yeah, talk about financial challenges. And then I think about the interrelationship between mental health in the workplace and stress. And then the fact that somebody's finances also need to be in a good place. Or that's going to be another stressor that they bring with them to work. And then you get into people who, you know, get make poor decisions because they're under stress or you know, can't think clearly or we deal with this every once in a while in HR, get a little cranky because they've got a little stress in their life, you know. So it's such an important thing, but if you manage it, it's not as stressful, right? So it's almost like, you know, if you ignore it and just hope that it goes away and eventually you open up your 401k.com account or whatever and see, oh, good, I have multi-million dollars. I can retire now. it just doesn't really work that way.
Yeah, you make a great point on stress. The American Psychological Association did a study, I think with AP, where they found, and you may have read it, 60% of chronic illness is directly related to financial stress. So I'm imagining just in the back end of this study, you know, when you're at the doctor filling out that form, it's probably asking you what your financial stress is and then, you know, correlating because it was tens of thousands of people. But the reality is financial stress is a feeder stress for relationship stress, you know, for work stress because you don't perform as well at work. So it feeds into all these other aspects of your life. And so it's particularly detrimental from that standpoint. And also from the standpoint that it's not, you know, with stress, we release cortisol, which is a fight or flight hormone that's helpful in dangerous situations. But to have that coursing through your body all, you know, on a regular basis because your finances I mean, they're ever present, right? It's not a one-time thing. I mean, that's a big deal. And so we've done a whole lot of work with healthcare companies as clients that have looked at, you know, how can we improve both? You know, what are the synergies here? Because you really can make a big, I mean, so many chronic conditions, ulcers, anxiety, it's even been tied to heart attacks, migraines, you know, can be tied pretty directly to financial stress. You make an impact there, you're going to see a resulting impact in people's health and well-being, and mental health certainly as well. Those are so interrelated. I mean,
I'm curious, as you have done this work and helped companies address some of these issues, have you been able to measure some of the, you know, kind of the ROI of, you know, improving somebody's mental well-being and financial well-being, and how that actually reflects in the company's performance?
Yes. And we have several studies. So we've been able to measure ROI, as I mentioned, coordinated to reduction in healthcare claims of the same people. So this is, you know, this is like a double blind placebo study where you're looking at the same people over time and they have fewer claims versus those that did not interact, you know, having more. So we've been able to look at that. We've also tied it to reductions in unplanned absenteeism, garnishments, 401k loans, all of which cost money to administer. And, you know, unplanned absenteeism obviously has, you know, financial implications. Performance and productivity, those are harder. So those are more based on performance ratings and how those are changing. So that's harder, right? We're a knowledge economy in a large part. It's hard to completely track productivity. But benefit satisfaction and turnover. Turnover has a pretty significant correlation, because as you know, the more an employee values their benefits and the more they have in their retirement plan or their HSA, the more they're seeing their employer as a really critical component of their financial security. And you don't want to leave when that's the case versus, you know, not. So
that's huge. Yeah. And I just think, you know, depending upon your organization and which study you look at, you know, turnover costs could range from, you know, a couple thousand dollars per person, kind of on the lower end, up to like 3, 4, 5 times somebody's annual salary for these, you know, really critical, hard to fill jobs. That's a pretty quick ROI on some of that.
Yes. Yes. And you're right. It's very variable depending on the field and degree of specialization. But yes, absolutely. We work with a lot of healthcare organizations where there's a shortage of nurses already, and there's nurse burnout and all of that. And, you know, obviously we're just one part of, you know, much larger solution on how do you retain these nurses and make sure they don't burn out. But, you know, the financial aspect is a key piece of that.
Absolutely. What a critical topic. And, you know, I just reflect back on, you know, some of the conversations that I've had with employees who get, you know, injured outside of work, but did not select, you know, a voluntary disability, policy, long-term disability or short-term disability. And hopefully most employers are offering those types of things, but they're not always included, right? A lot of times you have to choose that. And that $4, $5, $6 a paycheck, you know, is something that you don't want to spend. But when, you know, when it happens and you don't have the protection, for instance, and you can't work, you know, it's those types of scenarios that, you know, I'll never forget the first time someone walked into my office with a serious health condition that would keep them out of work more than 6 months. And at that time with that employer, we did not offer long-term disability unless you voluntarily selected it. So looking up and having to tell that individual, I'm sorry, you're only covered up to 6 months. You're going to have to go on disability. You know, you're going to have to, you know, figure something out, find a job that you can perform. You know, it's like, you know, at that point, you just wish that person had made a different decision, but you can't go back in time, right? Had somebody been guiding them along, you know, it could have been a much better situation for that person. And in HR, most of us want to help people, but there's nothing we can do to help that person at that point. Right. Right? It's too late.
Right. Yeah. You make such an important point there, which is, and it's so fascinating to me how, you know, it choosing the healthcare plan or, you know, these decisions, right, about your benefits, people are looking at as paperwork they have to turn in by a certain date and literally spending, you know, 5-15 minutes in many cases, if that, you know, it's, or what are my coworkers doing? I'm just going to, you know, do that. And, but they have life-changing implications.
Yeah.
And so that's another very, very important piece, you know, that we're always working with employers on is how it's very hard. And I think it's getting better post COVID because I think we recognize the importance of being prepared for unexpected shocks, but it's very, very counterintuitive to, you know, as humans to worry about things that may happen in the future, you know, versus being so focused on what's right in front of us. And, you know, anything that can be done company-wide to really take a step back and make sure employees really have the time and understanding and guidance to make those decisions thoughtfully so they aren't in that position,
right,
is huge. So,
right. Yeah. And I mean, and we, you know, we said this at the very beginning, you know, HR, we're really not supposed to be advising, right? Like, we're not supposed to be giving any sort of investment advice at all. We're not trained to do that. And if we are, we shouldn't be doing it in the context as an employer representative. But every time one of these young people that thinks they're invincible signs up for an HSA plan because it's like almost free, but don't put any money into an HSA. And I'm like, are you sure you don't want to put any money into this HSA? Cause you have a high deductible, you know, yeah. Do you have $5,000 or $10,000 that in your back pocket, if you go to the ER, cause that yeah. might happen to you.
Yes. Yes.
But you can't, you know, it's their benefit. They pick it. They choose, you know. So, so does your organization help people actually select benefits?
Absolutely.
Selections? Okay. Yeah. Okay.
Select benefits and determine how much to fund and, you know, and really kind of change the perspective of if you can set this up the right way, you know, you're going to be in such a better position long term. And, you know, we're it's exciting to see, especially with Gen Z. Coming in, I feel like just based on kind of what they've been through, especially this past year, there is a much bigger understanding of I've got to take control of my life and it has to be a priority or I'm not going to have upward mobility. I mean, I think that's right. a reality is, you know, we are in a situation where inflation and taxes are likely to rise. And, you know, it's going to be potentially hard on future generations, but the things they do now to protect themselves and to set themselves up for success, you know, might be what ends up changing the trajectory so that we can restore that upward mobility.
Yeah. Yeah. I had a really great interview with a true Gen Zer a few months back. And I was, you know, I was asking because it's like, it's so funny because it's like, you know, at one point I was the youngest generation in the workplace and, you know, I felt like, why don't people understand, you know, us? And now I'm asking the same question of Gen Z because I'm like, I don't get you Gen Zers. But they, you know, one of the things she called out specifically was, you know, show me the money. I want to be financially successful. I want to be, you know, I want to be in control of my destiny. And that was one of her top goals, in addition to being environmentally, socially responsible and yeah. you know, being diverse and inclusive. And, you know, it's a wish list, but, you know, it was encouraging to hear that there was that pragmatism. Cause I think a lot of times people assume that, you know, they want the world and they don't want to work for it. You know, kids these days, it's the old saying that you hear
right,
with every generation.
Right.
But, you know, I think there is a lot of pragmatism. I mean, what have they seen? You know, the Great Recession when they were young.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now they've seen what happens when everybody gets locked inside because of a pandemic. And yeah. they've seen people get laid off over the last year. And all these people being unemployed, and people in the service industry have absolutely no income besides, you know, an unemployment benefit. And again, you're not free. You can't yeah. be in control of your own destiny if you don't grab this stuff. So, yeah, I'm encouraged.
I am too. We work with a lot of NFL players. NFL Players Association is a client, and seeing, you know, we started in 2009, seeing just the shift in perspective. It is now cool to be good with your money. You know? It really is. Yeah. It really is. And you have Marshawn Lynch, and you have some of these really big names going, look, you know, you got to pay attention to this. We don't want to go broke. We want to be future moguls. And, you know, it is very cool. And I'm seeing that. I mean, it's anecdotal, but I have a 9-year-old, or not 9-year-old, sorry, 11. That was, wow.
It's been a long, long year.
So I have a tween, basically, that is, you know, and just him and his friends and the way they talk about life and, you know, global warming and just the future, they are very in tune to the world they are inheriting and what they need to be thinking about for kids. You know, I mean, these are kids. You know, I don't remember, I'm a Gen Xer. We didn't sit around and talk about the future of the world, right? That was not, we were doing a lot
right,
of things,
right.
It wasn't that.
Yeah. So, yeah. Tell me about your views on diversity, equity, and inclusion. Was not one of the, it's not one of the things that I grew up, you know, discussing. It just wasn't as top of mind for me. So, yeah.
I can tell you every Brady Bunch episode, but yeah.
Yeah. I was real good at everything I cared about, which was nothing really important in, you know, making the world a better place. So good for them. Good for them.
Yeah.
Oh, that's great. Well, this has just been a wonderful, wonderful conversation. And it's something, this is a topic I'm personally very passionate about. And, you know, I'm still very much a student in my journey of financial education. But if 2020 has taught us anything, it's that we can't take anything for granted, and we need to take some control of our own destiny. And that means being educated. So Liz, thank you for starting the organization and having this be one of the things that you're focused on. So we are going to shift gears, and we're going to go into the HR flash round. All right.
Okay.
So we're going to come at you hot here. So,
All right.
Question number one, what are you reading right now?
Creativity Inc. It is Ed Catmull, who is the founder of Pixar. And it's all about how do you set up a culture that just fosters creativity? What's fascinating is I think we tend to think creativity is a result of outside inspiration, but you actually can do a lot to get your employees to become much more creative. And they've done a great job, as evidenced by all their movies. I mean, just the string of hit after hit after hit. So highly recommend it.
Absolutely. I may have shed a tear at a Pixar movie once or twice.
Well, that's part of it, is they're looking at layers, right? They want to entertain the kids, but there's this underpinning, you know, moral of the story that's really, really powerful in almost everything they do. So
yeah, I feel you, Woody. I feel you. So. Yeah, my kids are like, why are you crying about the cowboy or because Buzz Lightyear made him less relevant, and I get that. That's a fear. Anyways, okay, we'll unpack that later after the show. All right, question number two: who should we be listening to?
My two favorite, and I guess everyone, I think it's important for everyone to find who resonates with them, but I would say Brené Brown and Gary Vee, for different reasons. Brené is just incredibly entertaining and authentic, and, you know, I am a believer in vulnerability and, you know, what opening yourself up to kind of new experiences and potential for failure can do. Gary is just a force to be reckoned with. He just inspires the hell out of me because he's so bound and determined and tenacious and, you know, really preaches kind of this concept of agency and leaning in and you know, make life what you want it to be. So those are my two.
Yeah, I love that. Love both of them, but drastically different individuals.
Yes.
So
yes.
Yeah, you've got the full spectrum there. But I do love a well-placed Gary V F-bomb. I mean, he almost uses the word, you know, it's an art. And
Yeah. It's noun, verb, adjective, adverb.
Yeah. Like, yeah.
Multi-purpose.
Versatility. All right. Last question here. How can our listeners connect with you?
So the best way is info@financialfinesse.com. I actually am, I receive those emails. So that's the best way to reach me, but also, you know, for any questions about our services, et cetera.
Perfect. Perfect. And we'll have all that information in the show notes so that our listeners can connect and learn more. And I strongly encourage any HR professional that's looking at benefits and thinking about how do I maintain competitiveness as it relates to benefits package. You know, this is certainly something that I'm going to investigate and look into a little bit more for my employees. It's a fascinating conversation today, and I really appreciate the work, Liz.
Great. Thank you so much.
All right. Take care.
Bye.
All right. That does it for the Rebel HR podcast. Big thank you to our guests. Follow us on Facebook at Rebel HR Podcast, Twitter at Rebel HR Guy, or see our website at rebelhumanresources.com. The views and opinions expressed by Rebel HR Podcast are those of the authors and do not necessarily reflect the official policy or position of any of the organizations. No animals were harmed during the filming of this podcast.
Baby.